had those tubes not that long ago.
By the way, do you know that that's how ostriches kill people?
What's in blood pudding?
I think we should get rid of this expression.
Oh, God, it's got to be the single most annoying new expression of the last 10 or 20 years.
Just bend over. This won't hurt a bit.
And it is so horrible.
Are you going to the same bank that Mary Poppins' boss worked at? Artichoke, artichoke, oh, arty, arty, choke. Artichoke, artichoke, oh, arty, 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 choke. Ba-dum, bum, bum. Time for smart dribble, everyone. It's Kurt Schneider.
Oh, gosh. And John Ellenthal, welcome to another episode of Smart Dribble. Kurt, we're going to talk about one of our favorite topics today. I'm going to temporarily grant us a magic power that unfortunately will disappear at the end of this episode, where we get to each eliminate five incredibly annoying phrases or words from American conversation. I hadn't considered artichoke, 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 but now we may each have the power to eliminate six words or phrases that are overused and annoying and trite and unoriginal and unimportant because they are so painfully overused that they have lost all meaning. So this is annoying words and phrases, which has a little bit of a pet peeves angle going on. And at our age, pet peeves are something that come on, that enter most conversation.
Kind of like a rash.
Kind of like a rash on the brain.
Just to say that Artichoke, Artichoke was my take on the song Lollipop, Lollipop, oh, lolly, lolly, lollipop.
Do you want to kick us off with an annoying word or phrase that you want struck from American conversation?
To be honest, John, I just think, aha, that's it. To be honest, I hate that.
And you hate that, of course, because you assume the person was going to be honest. But since they had to call it out, you wonder if when they don't say it, are they really being honest?
Are they prevaricating at me all the time instead of just telling the truth?
Are they obfuscating the truth?
Yes.
What's the other word for lie that starts with like an M that's a really good word?
Don't say masticate because that means to chew on. It doesn't mean what you think it does.
I know that. And I remember playing hangman in college with a friend, probably during class, and I had chosen to hide the word masticate, and he thought he got it before he fully got it. And he made some physical gestures that indicated that he didn't get it, if you know what I mean.
I got it. You know what the name of my intramural high school softball team was? Because we were in high school back then.
I do not.
The Master Batters.
Yeah. That has a high school male mentality to it.
So to be honest is the phrase I'd like to eradicate.
I can see why, Kurt. I can totally see why. My last name is Ellenthal, as you know. And when I played fantasy sports, my team name was always the Neanderthals.
Excellent.
And I borrowed the imagery of the Geico caveman commercials for my logo.
Are cavemen Neanderthals?
I think for general purpose use, they are. But I don't know if that's technically correct.
No,
mendacity was the word I was thinking of. Isn't mendacity lying?
Yes.
There are a lot of really big words for lying.
Yes.
To be honest, which is a good expression, there are lots and lots of words that we use that add no value to what we're actually saying and just take up more time and space. And I'm sure you and I are guilty of it probably more than the average person. But there's so many filler words. Here's one that gets me. I would like to eliminate it from any conversation that I'm either a part of or can hear. And that is the term, no problem. Now, no problem comes up a lot. It somehow along the way replaced you're welcome. Someone has done something for you. You have become their customer, which businesses spend a lot of time, money, and effort trying to get someone to become. And they deliver their service or their product. And you say, thank you for that. And they say, not you're welcome, but no problem. And I'm thinking, well, I'm really glad I didn't inconvenience you since you're here to provide this service. I was polite about it. You're welcome. When did your welcome get replaced by no problem?
I agree with you.
You're going to have to agree with me closer to the microphone next time.
I agree with you. It drives me crazy. You do this great thing and it's no problem. Oh, sorry. Far be it from me.
I didn't mean to be a customer.
Yeah.
It implies that there may have been a problem in doing the thing, but to me, it was no big whoop, no problem. Thank you. You're welcome.
It's interesting because obviously both of those expressions drive us crazy because we've both discussed these in previous podcasts, not in detail like today. So they are they stick in our craw? Isn't that the expression?
It is. And that is.
I like that expression. I don't want to
say that. That's not an expression that I'm looking to expunge, eradicate, or eviscerate, or disembowel.
How about this? By the way, do you know that's how ostriches kill people?
They disembowel their prey?
Yeah.
Their first move is they take their talons and stick it in the abdomen?
They have very sharp claws or talons, and they take it up, and because their legs, you know, are big, those ostriches, and they basically slice you down, right down the middle, and your entrails fall out. And then if you were like probably in France, you'd gather it up, or England, and you'd have sweetbreads or tripe, which is the same thing, which is kind of, I don't like it.
What's in blood pudding?
Blood pudding, yeah, is blood, but it's not tripe.
And isn't there something called haggis, which is like a sheep's uterus in some ridiculously dark sauce?
Yeah, I don't think it's a sheep's uterus, but it is a sheep's something. Oh, it could be the uterus, or it could be the womb, or I don't know what, but yeah.
I want to have a baby. You haven't a womb. Name the movie.
Monty Python, Life of Brian.
You betcha. Great movie. You All betcha. Right.
I think we should get rid of this expression. At the end of the day...
Oh, God. It's got to be the single most annoying new expression of the last 10 or 20 years. I think if you, particularly if you ask business people, even though it's leaked well beyond business, I think if you ask business people who work in an office... List the most annoying expression that has become part of the regular business lexicon at the end of the day has to be the number one offender. Just say, this is what really matters. Or finally, or ultimately, at the end of the day, you pompous ass. I agree with you, Kurt.
Well, there are two more just like that. Can I keep going?
I don't see why not.
There are two more just like that in business. And this one has come in about 5 years ago. Let's lean into this. Let's lean into this problem. Lean in. Ridiculous.
I think Sheryl Sandberg, wasn't her big famous best-selling book about leaning in?
It was. And I think probably after that, everyone appropriated this and took it for their own. Let's lean in and blah, blah, blah. No, let's actually not deal with the problem and stick our heads up our butts.
You want to circle back on that later or take it offline? Let's put that in the parking lot so we can go on with our conversation.
And maybe later on we can unpack it.
You have to unpack it.
That's a new one. The single worst offenders of all of these in business, private equity folks.
Yes, I think a lot of these terms do originate in the financial services world. And it's like going to Starbucks and trying to make sense of the Starbucks menu when you're talking to private equity folks. It is a completely different language. It's a series of words and expressions that have long ago become stale. And worse than that, they've leaked it out into the general business population and public.
And it's so they can say something without saying anything.
Exactly. Are we on the same page? I think we're on the same page, Kurt, on that one. All right. So this one probably comes loosely from that genre as well. Paradigm shift.
Yeah.
Every time something minuscule changes in the market, in the environment, in your strategy, no matter how small it is, this is a real paradigm shift. Can you think of an expression that means less than paradigm shift? I do think we embrace these expressions that they must make us feel like we're either in the in crowd or smarter than we actually are. Or you know what it is? We're simply saying something that's more important than it actually is.
A real paradigm shift is when we decided that we would stop seeing the earth as flat and that it was round.
That is a paradigm shift. I agree with you. When Columbus did not sail off the edge of the earth because it's not flat, that's a bona fide paradigm shift.
When we realized that the earth goes around the sun and not the opposite, also paradigm shift.
Yes, not when we changed our logo from blue to red. That is not a paradigm shift, everybody. And now we're just getting upset.
So speaking of that, it's in the same way. Think outside the box.
Oh, you know what? That is on my list, too. What a completely vacuous, empty, meaningless set of words.
We're getting good at getting rid of things.
Well, look, that's the purpose of this particular episode. We get temporary and magical, so magical they don't actually work, eradication skills. But these are all cliches. And I think there are reasons that something becomes a cliche because it has meaning and it gets used.
You know, we should
and then it goes down the backside of the sine curve where it gets overused to the point that it ultimately means nothing.
We should pick a decade, the 50s, 60s, 70s, close enough, but far enough away, and come up with what the expressions of the days were then that don't exist anymore. That would be fun.
Yes, which leads me to our next expression. We can make that part of our podcast journey, Kurt. The word journey, which I really don't want to pick on because I like the concept that we're all on this arc and we're trying to get better and more self-aware and be better versions of ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's used in such a pop psychology, self-important way that it just, when someone says they're on a journey, look, if they mean it authentically, no problem. But a lot of times it just makes me cringe, Kurt.
Unless they're singing Don't Stop Believing, that's a journey I can go on.
That is a journey. That was my junior prom theme. What was your junior prom theme, Kurt?
I don't know. Junior, senior was Let It Be in 83.
Well, Let It Be, the Beatles were your, I guess in 83, the Beatles, people still knew who they were.
Well, we were just trying to rhyme. Like my brother's was Born to Run in 81. In my high school, we tried to rhyme.
Well, you know what? Rhyming, it's been proven a million times over that things that rhyme are easier to remember, which is why there are a lot of advertising slogans where they try to rhyme. And of course, we know from the OJ trial, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. And that just stuck in the minds of the jurors. So there is value in rhyming, even though I think your attempts at it were ham-handed, forced, and a little uncomfortable.
I didn't do them. So they were not mine. It was the
problem. Why don't you know your junior prom theme? Did you not go?
We didn't have a junior prom. We only had a senior prom, but I actually did go as a junior because if you were on the prom committee as a junior for your senior year, you got to go. You got special dispensation.
Wow.
And I remember we went out to dinner, all of us. There was probably five of us, five couples, so 10 of us. And we're sitting there and I ordered wine. I made the mistake of ordering the cheapest bottle on the wine list. And by the way, here's a little thing for you to know. The actual worst bottle of wine on the wine list is the second cheapest because every person, every bar or in restaurant knows that that's what people order. So they put their worst bottle as the second cheapest. Anyway, so I ordered a bottle of wine.
Why do restaurants want people to have the worst possible wine experience?
No, they try to get rid of their wine. So they put the bad one as the second worst.
Because they don't think most people can tell the difference between good and bad wine?
Exactamundo.
I'd like to be clear that I'm one of those people that cannot tell the difference between good and bad wine.
Here I am, 16 years old. I'm at the prom. I ordered a bottle of wine and the guy comes and pours a little bit in my glass. I had never ordered a bottle of wine before. I sat there waiting and everyone started looking at me. I didn't know what was going on. The guy's waiting. I'm waiting for him to fill the frigging glass up. So there you go.
I don't know very much about wine at all, but sometimes when you are the head of the party, maybe a business thing, they do bring you the wine to taste. And one time, Kurt, I tasted it and I said, you know what? No bueno. This is not right. And I sent it back. And as it turned out, they came back to the table and they said, sir, you're correct. That wine had what had turned or whatever happens to wine. And it was one of the greatest, proudest moments that I had successfully detected it was bad wine and sent it back in a fleeting bolt of confidence in the wine realm.
And you got validated for it, which is fantastic.
It was a great moment.
John, no offense, but I just want to tell you something about your wine tasting ability.
No offense?
No offense, but. So that gives you total carte blanche to say whatever the hell you want. As long as you say no offense first, you can then totally offend the person.
There are a whole group of words and phrases that when someone says them, you know that they are going to say, but.
Just bend over. This won't hurt a bit.
Kurt, that wasn't the kind of but I was referring to. All right, Kurt, this is an expression you hear a lot in business or reading about business, and it is so horrible when you refer to the people who work for a firm as human capital. Can you find a more dehumanizing way to refer to a bunch of people as a pile of human capital?
It's an oxymoron, John. Capital is, well, it depends. Are you doing capital with an O and therefore like you're the capital dome?
You know how that's exactly how I remember which capital is right. Capital the O is the building because it's got a circular O-shaped dome.
And how do you tell the difference between stalactites and stalagmites?
The stalactites are on the top, T, top. Stalagmites are on the bottom. Did I get that one right?
You did. Ding,
ding,
ding.
Disappointed I got it right?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. I love it. That is a, what do they call those things? A onomatopoeia? No. A enzymatic cleaner? No. What's the thing when it helps you remember something?
Not a juxtaposition. A pneumatic device?
Yes.
Is it a pneumatic or a pneumonic? Must be pneumonic.
Pneumonic.
Because the tubes that you have at the bank are pneumatic tubes?
Yes.
And they make that noise?
Yes.
So pneumonic and pneumatic are very close together.
The bank. Are you going to the same bank that Mary Poppins' boss worked at?
When was the last time you did a drive-through? Didn't they? They had those tubes not that long ago. So that's a pneumatic tube, and it's a mnemonic device to remember something.
And you're not moronic if you use a mnemonic.
Do you know? You must know other mnemonic devices.
I do.
Can you think of any?
Yeah, sure. Right now, Holmes.
Holmes versus what?
Holmes is how you remember the five Great Lakes.
Oh, Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Superior.
Now, Holmes,
of course, I had the benefit of Holmes there. So how about Roy G. Biv?
Yes, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
Those are all the colors in the spectrum?
Yes. And yes. All right. I have a great expression that I'd like to eradicate, John.
I hope it's not Roy G. Biv.
We only serve vodka here.
Oh, God. You. I wonder how many of our episodes make some reference, direct or otherwise, to gin. I have another one for you. People who are referred to or refer to themselves as a thought leader. I assure you, if you call yourself a thought leader, you're not one. So thought leadership, why does everything have to have maximum pomposity, which may not be a word. In fact, that may have been a pompous statement all by itself, which would be ironic. But thought leadership.
Look, I agree with you. It goes back to that expression.
I disagree with you.
It goes back to the expression I like, which is, if you got to say it, you ain't.
Exactly. Let other people conclude that stuff.
What about this one, which is, and people don't mean it in a bad way, like saying thought leadership, which I think is pompous and all that. I think people just get this wrong, but it does rub me the wrong way, as they say, is when people say, myself would want to go there, blah, 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 or
yeah,
he and myself for going. Now, who's on the call? Well, it's Fred, Dottie, and myself. No, me. It's just reflexive. I did this myself is how you say it. Or I ate the entire cake myself. That is correct. To say that Jimmy and myself are going to the bar to have vodka is wrong. What do you think about vampires?
No, I don't know. Why do you ask me how I feel about vampires?
Well, do you know what Vampires and Dracula is based on? Vlad the Impaler. He lived in Transylvania. He lived in Romania. And he and his brother, his dad was like a king there or whatever. And the Ottomans took him and they imprisoned them. His brother turned and went to the Ottomans. Vlad went back to Romania, got really pissed off. And he was called Vlad the Impaler because he would take people and he would sharpen these trees into spikes and he'd put his enemies on top. And gravity would let them get impaled and people would see them. He was called Vlad the Impaler. And then they said he sucked blood and he became Dracula.
That's a good story.
Thank you.
Bram, who wrote Dracula?
Bram Stoker.
Bram Stoker, of course, because there was the movie Bram Stoker's Dracula. Have you ever, ever, ever in your life, be honest, I will be as well, use the expression awesome sauce? I'm afraid I may have.
Awesome sauce?
I don't know. It's possible I was drunk.
I don't know if I've even heard it.
You've never heard of like something so like this is awesome sauce?
No. I know bee's knees, but I don't know awesome sauce.
Have you ever, ever, ever used the term cray cray to mean crazy?
No, but people do in text these days just say KK.
So the word okay.
Can I just say something? How short are we of attention spans and needing to shorten things that we have to go from okay to just K? we have to lose one letter?
Well, I'm actually okay with that, no pun intended, but here's what I'm not okay with. We have a tendency to shorten things, right? Because we can just do everything faster. That's just a natural thing. No harm, no foul. People who write okay as O-K-A-Y. So you have taken the letters O-N-K that communicate okay, and you somehow figured out how to make it longer. You know, maybe we should applaud that. It's completely counter trend.
It's actually, as we've talked about on previous podcasts, it's actually an acronym for Old Kitteridge, which is a town near Albany, the top of the Taconic Parkway. And one of our presidents, Martin Van Buren, came from there. And when he was running for president, he was from Old Kitteridge. And he was Martin Van Buren. He was okay from Old Kitteridge. There you have it.
Have you ever used the term, even accidentally, Kurt? Full honesty here. Smart Dribble Confidential, published to anybody who wants to listen. Have you ever used the word irregardless?
Probably at some point.
How do you feel about people who say something and then say, just saying?
Yeah. Don't like that. But I think what they mean by that is, I'm just saying.
Yeah, just saying.
So actually, I was wrong, John. It wasn't Old Kitteridge that Martin Van Buren was from, where we get OK. It was Kinderhook, New York. It's still OK, Old Kinderhook. So that's what that was, not Kitteridge. I just got the two conflated.
Well, thank you for fessing up, Kurt.
Yeah. So have we come up with five each, do we think? I think we have, John. So, John, at the end of the day, I think it's time to close this podcast.
I don't disagree, Kurt.
Well, to be honest, I think it was pretty good.
I think we reached the end of our journey on this particular episode.
Well, look, it was just you and myself doing it, so it's hard to figure out how we could go wrong. But if we unpacked it, maybe we would understand that, no offense, John, but sometimes you weren't that funny.
Do you think that anyone out there thinks of us as thought leaders on a bunch of things that you don't need to know, but you kind of are a little bit glad you do when you learn about them?
Like eggplant in Italian is melanzane.
And of course, as we know from our last episode, eggplant in England is aubergine.
Yes.
Such a beautiful word.
You know what's aubergine. A good word? Is artichoke. Oh, we started this episode with artichoke. Artichoke in Italy is carciofi.
Well, that's nice.
Right?
That's nice. Would you like to thank me for my part in this conversation?
Yes, thank you.
No problem.
All right, everyone. Look, we here at Smart Dribble, and this episode will definitely do it. We really promised the dribble, John, but what do we really hope for?
We hope for the smart.
Because literally, this episode was like a tsunami.
And we did promise that it wouldn't hurt and it wouldn't take too long. So in that case, I think we met our burden. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back again next week with a new episode of Smart Dribble. Until then, Kurt and I hope your week is filled with all kinds of smart dribble.
Arrivederci, everyone.
How does that relate to expressions we'd like to eradicate?
Ciao.
We'll circle back next week.
Oh, excellent.
we hope you'll join us. Because at the end of the day, this is not worth doing without you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.